Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga, Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good today. Thanks for asking. And we want to thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Today on The Voice of Yoga, we will talk about satisfaction and why most of our pursuits leave us wanting. In this show, we will cover the physics of spirituality and explore some reasons for cravings, longings, and disappointments. There is an innate drive in each of us to be whole and complete, but completion cannot take place in the manifested form. Listen as we explain the transformation of an individual from human to divine as the true experience of fulfillment. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are talking consciousness. Enjoy the Kriya Yoga spiritual advance. Get the light in your soul and accept wholeness. So Swami, let's get right to it. Let's talk about satisfaction and why most of our pursuits leave us wanting.
Yeah, it's like you said in the opening, we're trying to complete ourselves in the physical world. And we're so embroiled in the physical world. But there's this innate drive in all of us that we really want to be whole and we want to be complete. And trying to complete ourselves in the physical world kind of deteriorates into greed, because you start to get what it is that you're looking for, you think you want or you think you need. And as soon as you get it, you become rapidly dissatisfied. And like we said in the opening, to understand the physics of spirituality, I think, is really helpful. The reason why we can't complete ourselves in the physical world is because the physical world is separate from the world of wholeness or spirit. And that's one of the things that we always say, that the concept of God is said to be everywhere and in everything, yet no one sees it. And the reason no one sees it is because God is whole. God rests in this state of perfect divine unity. And in order for something to manifest, it must split from the unified state. It manifests in half, and it leaves behind the complementary unmanifested other part. And that kind of gives us a trinity that a lot of the religions use as the underpinnings of their reality system. In fact, that is supported by the discoveries of quantum physics, that they said underlying matter is energy, and underlying energy is the void. Now, what we find is that two of those dimensions of reality are dualistic, which means that they're in half. And the reason we know is because the simple fact that they are in half, there's a point of departure which creates contrast. And that enables what's before us to report in our senses. Our senses, the lower mind, works on contrast. So when we are thinking humanly, we are basically thinking with a faculty that just deals with duality. And what we are starting to find is that that's a problem. And even, say, for example, mathematically, if the goal of life was to go from point A to point B, you could make as many moves as you wanted, but you could only go one half the distance with each move, you would find that you got rapidly close infinitely close, but then frustrated as all get out because you're never going to reach point B. And that is the main reason why when we're trying to complete ourselves with things that are reported in our senses, we're off point. And it's never going to happen. And that's why this whole thing of transformation, that in order for us to actualize this innate drive that we want to be whole, we want to be complete, the human has to transform. And what that literally means is we have to trans, go through form. We have to separate our identity from the confinement and the limitation of duality. And we have to join with this other resource. And in the framework of doing that, we find that it can get complicated because it's very easy to go from what's visible and tangible into what's invisible and tangible. It's very easy to go from particles into the realms of waves, but you haven't really made any kind of vertical leap. You're still on par and you're still in duality. And duality is governed by the law of karma. And the law of karma is basically what we're putting out is what we're getting back. Under the law of karma, there's good and there's bad. There's right and there's wrong. And in order for us to actualize this experience of wholeness, we have to rise above karma. We have to rise above duality. And in order to do that, we have to think differently. We can't use the testimony of our senses. That's why the fifth stage of yoga, pratyahara, sense withdrawal, is so important to understand the application of it. Also, your fifth yama, non-sensuality. That in the framework of yoga, they laid out a path for us that if we follow it, we can move out from the limitations of the lower mind and rational thinking, and then we can move into the benefit of the higher mind.
So earlier you were talking about that we want to be whole. Would that explain why they're creative people, whether they're artists or musicians, why they feel sometimes that they're never good enough, that they never get that perfect painting or that perfect piece of artwork or symphonies or whatever, because they're not truly connected to the divine, they're not whole?
Well, to answer your question, that might not necessarily be true. I think the major thing that happens with that is that they are dealing with their creativity and they're dealing with ideas that are coming into consciousness. Now, where the problem lies is when they put it into form. Because just like we had said, when you put something into form, it has to separate from perfect divine unity. So even if your consciousness, even if you are dealing with the absolute, when you put something into form, it comes up short because it's in half. And that, I think, is a big part of the depression that artists go through. Because a lot of them, they just don't understand the physics of spirituality. And they're trying to, again, like most of us do, we're trying to complete ourselves in a dimension of reality where completion can't happen. So I think that's where the problem lies, maybe.
So I have a question for you. So if we want to be whole, what happens to us if we don't have this awareness that that is what we're longing for?
Yeah, what happens is that there becomes a kickback from your unlived latent potential. Again, that you want to be whole, you want to be complete. And that starts to manifest itself as symptoms of guilt, shame, anger, resentment, blame, emptiness, and boredom. And then if you continue to live out of a belief in something other than the unified state, then what we find is that these original symptoms can actually start to complicate themselves into symptoms in the body. Incidents and events in your life, things, accidents and things of that nature. And again, a lot of it is due to the simple fact that we're still living in under the law of karma.
So the title of our show is Spirit as Source of Fulfillment. So how do we go about becoming aware of spirit, and how do we get that to be our source of fulfillment?
The main thing about this is that you have to understand that we have to be taught how to do this. That if we just live instinctually by living out of our humanness, we will survive, but we won't grow. And that's what initiation is all about. Humans had to be taught how to do this, because by living instinctually, by thinking, breathing, eating, sleeping, fornicating, we survive, but we don't grow. And in the framework of learning this, that there is a process that unfolds in three phases, where we go from unconscious awareness to self-conscious awareness to superconscious awareness. And that process parallels the metamorphosis of a butterfly. Butterflies aren't born butterflies, they're born caterpillars. Caterpillars are insects in the larvae state, they do nothing but indulge. And the characteristics of the human in the larvae state were careless, emotional, indulgent, excitable. And unless you are educated or informed, we will continue to live out of that level of consciousness, from the cradle right to the grave.
So we're talking about fulfillment, and some people might think of that as having things, having food, having clothes, you know, that type of fulfillment. But we're talking as spirit as the source of fulfillment. So what does it look like? Does it change us when we have this attention to spirit as that source?
Yeah, in fact, we have to change almost completely to even be able to access that level of consciousness. And on a very simplistic level, what's happening is that you are rising above your karma. You're moving out of a belief in two powers, and you're moving into an understanding of yourself as being spirit, as a complete, whole individual. Yeah, and identity with spirit, as we're finding, is that's the only source where we can really find fulfillment, because that's the only thing that will make us feel complete. That's one of the reasons why we fall prey to a lot of unnecessary dependencies, and we have these insatiable cravings, because you can't satisfy something with something that is in half. But the physics of spirituality is like attracts like, so we have to attune ourselves with the simple fact that we are spirit. And our identity initially is pretty much bound up in the fact that we are a human being with a material body. And to let all of that go, to identify with a part of yourself that is invisible and intangible, is where a lot of the work is involved, and the leadership has to be in place, because there's a lot of ways that this goes wrong, and there's only one way that it goes right.
Well, I think this is probably a pretty good spot to hear a word from our sponsors. So listeners, we'll be back with you in just a few moments.
Kriya Yoga Theory 1, Human Development and the Eight Essential Stages of Kriya Yoga. This program is a comprehensive course that will help you get your arms around the science of Kriya Yoga. It provides a clear understanding of the goals and objectives behind yoga, along with the physics of spirituality. It includes the practices, supportive concepts of Kriya Yoga, and the process in human development, apotheosis, the process of the human becoming divine. A complete guide on how to become a human in the adult state. Get the light in your soul and experience the simplicity and joy of union with the divine. This course is available in live classes at the ashram or online with 8 videos or 4 CDs. Visit our website, www.ipdtransform.com, for more information.
Welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So, Swami, I'd like to get back to talking to you about spirit as the source of fulfillment and insatiable cravings and talking about addictions. So do we become addicted because we don't have spirit as the source of fulfillment?
Well, that's an interesting topic because from my understanding, see, we are all codependent. The dynamics of any addiction really is need. But everything is going to be contingent upon what it is that you internalize to satisfy that need. So whatever it is that you desire. And for those of us that choose things that are visible and tangible, then we desire particles. Now, what we learned about particles is that they're dualistic. And so we have internalized an image that will produce an insatiable craving. But it will keep us in duality because we have an attraction for a belief in two powers. We have a reality that is a mix of good and evil as our foundation, what we are drawn to. Now, if you choose waves or thoughts, visions, you will be attracted to, again, something that is dualistic. But it's different than if you were attracted to particles. Particles would yield you more of an animal-type nature. Thoughts will bring you to what was called a human nature. They're a little bit different, but they're both dualistic. You will remain under the rule of karma. So you will be in the cycle of death and rebirth. But if you desire the invisible, intangible source of sustenance, what was called God. If you desired God, that is what would bring you to a divine nature, and you would experience what was called liberation, freedom from the cycle of death and rebirth.
So if I am looking to a substance, let's just use chocolate. If I desire chocolate more than I desire this relationship with God, that would be considered being evil, right?
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is that that could prevent you from having a desire for something invisible and intangible. That's why in your second stage of yoga, your first niyama is shaucha, which is purification. That purification in yoga, we must purify ourselves physically. And in the framework of doing that, that means that we have to eliminate all unnecessary dependencies. Because in order to really make this work, we have to put God first. God has got to be the one thing that you go to for validation. And anything that you put before that will create a failure force in your ability to attune yourself with this one power, with divine law, which operates out of pure goodness, pure absolute love, harmony, and peace. Something as simple as a craving for food will undermine your ability to do that. And scripture supports that with the whole thing where Jesus says that you cannot serve two masters, that you can't love chocolate and love God. And the physics of spirituality is like attracts like, and two things can't occupy the same space at the same time. So if we have internalized a lesser God and put it in a position of importance of a greater God, then it creates an interference pattern, and it prevents us from attuning ourselves to the one true God that Scripture talks about.
Well, I have a question for you. I was up against a question that was posed to me the other day, and this person is struggling with an addiction. And the question was, he wanted to know is, why do I do this? I don't understand why I'm doing it. And I honestly didn't quite know how to answer it. How would you have answered that question?
Well, if it isn't a conscious choice, then typically it's an unconscious pattern. And that could either be something that you internalized in your body, or you can also get these from the world mind, from the collective consciousness. And say, for example, I mean, a lot of this information is usually implanted into our personal consciousness through the media, through things like television and advertisement and marketing. And on a very fundamental level, it really targets infantile defense mechanisms. Because as infants, we need mom and dad. As an infant and in a physical body, preservation and survival is what governs your ability to continue or perpetuate yourself. And as an infant, we need mom and dad. But if you're in your teens, your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, your 60s, and you're still secretly seeking approval in your decision making, something isn't keeping step with your development. You never separated from mother, which metaphorically, symbolically, means that you never separated from that pattern. But then you can't just separate from the pattern. You can't just have no desire. We must desire something. As you review it and you look at it and you analyze it, if you desire particles, you're still in a belief in two powers. If you desire waves, you are still in a belief of two powers, and you are in the realms of suffering and decay and under the law of karma. But if you can figure it out and have a belief in this invisible, intangible source, and you can internalize it, and you become literally addicted to it, then your choice produces freedom. That it is the one thing that you can be addicted to that actually perpetuates a progressive cycle and growth and perpetuates life. And not death.
Well, can somebody be able to overcome an addiction without having to really know why they do it?
Oh, absolutely. And probably the best way to overcome any addiction is to substitute. That typically what is driving it is this innate drive in all of us that we want to validate ourselves, that our The sources that run preservation and survival are relatively blind. They don't have any power of discernment whatsoever. We can internalize anything as a symbol that will produce a feeling that I'm okay. In fact, what most people call normal behavior, I call neurotic. Because we're really driven by all of these external symbols that we've internalized that we use to produce a feeling that we're okay. And we go from the car to the phone to the computer to the television to the refrigerator to the gym, And it's all really driven by this unconscious need for something to validate myself. Now, the magic really happens when you can substitute your necessary dependency for your unnecessary dependency. If you can internalize the life force, if you can internalize the presence of divine love as your symbol for validation, then the panel's wired, the lid is off, and sky's the limit for you. But if you internalize anything other than that, then it really doesn't matter because you're still in the realms of suffering and decay and under the law of karma.
So I think we all know somebody that may be suffering from some kind of an addiction, what we've been talking about. So what are some of the things that you recommend that we say to this person, you know, without using cliches? And of course, it is our need, our human need, that we do want to help people. But at the same time, we want them to try to get along and try to do this for themselves. But what do you recommend that we do or say?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't really think there's anything that could be said. The best thing that you can do for somebody who is struggling with an unnecessary dependency is to look at them in their divine sonship, to look at them in their perfect state of spiritual selfhood, that God created each and every one of us perfect, whole, harmonious, and complete. Now, most of us have not accepted that as our identity, that we are using something visible and tangible or invisible and tangible. But you really can't convince somebody verbally. They have to decide that they want what you have. But if you can start to see them in their perfect spiritual selfhood, then that is the one thing that will start to enable them to see this in themselves. And as they start to see that, then the potential lies that they will maybe start to ask you. But otherwise, I don't know of any other way to do it. You really can't convince somebody with language and words, because for the most part, they really don't have the consciousness to be receptive to what it is that you're trying to explain to them.
And just for some minor clarification, you're talking about holding that the image of that person in your mind and visualizing them as a manifestation of God's perfect self?
Yeah, in fact, that's a good practice. In yoga, we call that namaste, to bow to the divinity within each and every one of us. But it's one thing when it's just kind of like the glad hand, and it's another thing when you can really start to see or accept your spiritual selfhood. And like we have been talking about, you start to live out of the perfection of being. And that starts to produce this like attracts like, because you are in a different source of sustenance. You are drawing from an invisible, intangible source, and you're at a different frequency. Everybody exists and everybody has this in their consciousness, but they might not have awareness of that.
Well, great. Well, thank you for that. I'm sure that'd be very helpful for all of us. So with that, I'd like to start closing down our program for today. So listeners, please visit our website. It's www.ipdtransform.com. Once you're there, about three quarters of the way down on the homepage, you're going to see a section called Swami Says Recent Posts. And so I invite you to click on some of the previous shows if you haven't listened to them, just for your continued learning experiences. So with that, keep those comments, questions, and coming, because Swami enjoys hearing from you. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll have another great program for you. Again, Wednesday nights at 5 o'clock is our Facebook Live episode. Be sure to tune in for that. So Swami, do you have any other final thoughts or insights about today's program?
Well, I would like to encourage everybody to continue to try and use what you need to produce the feeling that you're happy and try and find fulfillment with the availability of your number one need, the availability of this invisible, intangible source that is readily available to all of us. And with that, I wish everybody a good day. Namaste.
And thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Swami Jayananda. We'll be signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.